This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on today's show, what's ahead for Metro and public transportation in the new year? First up, whether you hope to reduce your credit card debt, increase your retirement savings, or put away enough money for the family vacation, January is a good time to be thinking about your financial goals. And joining us to talk about how to determine your current financial situation and ways to meet your financial goals for the upcoming year, our wealth psychology expert, KBK Wealth Connection founder and author Kathleen Burns Kingsbury, and Krista Simeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can join us with your questions and comments. Perhaps you've succeeded with a financial goal and you want to tell us about that. The number to call, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Kathleen and Chris, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody. Yes, indeed. You know, Chris, before we start talking about setting financial goals, are there any important numbers that we need to know about today?
Oh, just a few. The big one, of course, is the unemployment report, which is the first Friday of any given month, except when Friday falls on January 1st and the market's closed, it was pushed back a week. So today we got to look at the December employment report. It had been expected to show about 210,000 new jobs being created. And what we got was 292,000, which
almost 300,000. Wow, just
right,
blew right through that.
Pretty much. And that helped give the market, which had already gotten a boost overnight when the People's Bank of China reversed 9 days of making the dollar stronger versus the Chinese currency. They reversed that last night. And the minute they did that, it was around 8:30 Eastern time. When that happened, everything went higher. Dow futures, S&P futures up, you know, almost like 1-2% instantly. And then they held those gains. And then the employment numbers came out today. And last night, during the Chinese market session, the announcers were talking about how the market was, I hadn't heard this word, gyrating. They were.
Oh my gosh.
Like watching someone, if you have a blanket and you're holding one end of it and you're waving it,
you're
flipping
flapping
it.
Your arms up and down, you're making me seasick. Chris.
Yes, okay, yes. Sorry, yes. But it undulates. It was undulating quickly. And that's what's happening today. The Dow and S&P were both up a lot at the opening, and then those faded, and then one was up and one was down, and one was down and one was up. It was right out of the Saturday morning cartoons. And normally we wouldn't even give that much credence, but there are some commentators who have been referring to what's going on in China. The concern has been that they had their circuit breakers, and the circuit breakers were keeping people away because they weren't well designed. And then that somehow what was going on there was theater, that this really wasn't a market. It was just all for show. And that, you know, these are things that people would rather not think about. And that's why I'm glad we have Kathleen on here, because she can help, you know, investment professionals and people who aren't in the industry but who want a way to view their financial life in such a way that they're not either distracted or faked out by something that might actually turn out to be theater.
Well, Kathleen and Chris, do you know what one of my financial goals is this year?
No, what is it?
It's to stop paying so much attention to the market fluctuations.
What about all the people who write ads for the commercial financial media world, though? You're going to put those poor folks out of business if you do that.
But
well, I think
that's
a great way to be a little bit more rational and less emotional.
Exactly.
About the changes in the market from day to day. It could drive you crazy if you pay too much attention to it.
I mean, you don't want to have your head in the sand, but I mean, at the same time, if you watch the daily fluctuations, you'll lose your mind. So, for my peace of mind, I'm going to pay less attention this year.
Well, it's important to keep in mind, and Howard Kurtz, who is on various commercial networks, does news shows about other news shows, but he had a show called Reliable Sources, and now he's over on another network. But he wrote a book about 15 years ago called The Fortune Tellers, and it was really a guidebook, a handbook on how to view the financial media and to understand the, you know, what goes on behind the scenes. And Kathleen, you probably see this when you coach financial advisors and others on how to look at their finances. Do you frequently run into a situation where one person is paying way too much attention to the financial news and is getting worried, and then the other one, Mark, might, for example, might say, "You know, I'm done with it.
At least for this year, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to mess with it." Can that cause tension in a relationship?
Absolutely. I think the person who's paying attention to it, and I'm going to say overly paying attention to it, often that's an anxiety or a desire to take care of themselves financially that backfires. So it's really figuring out how can that person work with and tolerate their anxiety without falling victim to the media. And anyone who's worked for the media, and I have as well, you kind of know that it's really about a good soundbite. It's really about getting listeners. And it's not always the best thing to be listening to and reacting to immediately.
Kathleen, just how tough is it for people to set financial goals that they actually keep? Is it like a lot of New Year's resolutions?
Well, it's interesting because you say that they actually keep, because I think it's really easy to set a financial goal. I think it's really hard to keep it. And so there are a couple of things that people do to set themselves up inadvertently to fail. And the first one is that they have these lofty goals and they think too big, as opposed to thinking of something that's realistic that they could achieve. So instead of thinking big when it comes to financial goals, I actually recommend people think small.
Hmm.
And take small actions that then, by the end of the year, can really add up. For instance, if you want to, say you want to save $10,000 in a year, instead of looking at $10,000, break that down into what that's weekly. Or even break it in half and say, you know what, I'm going to shoot for five. If I save more than $5,000, that's great. So really thinking small, taking a goal and cutting it in half can actually lead to more success. Because it's better to achieve something than to feel bad about what you didn't achieve.
Kathleen, do you often find that people neglect, the average person might be neglecting one side of their balance sheet to the detriment of the other? In other words, focusing so much on saving, building up a pile of money, that they forget that they're being paid 1% on their savings account, if they're lucky, and they're being charged 20% almost, or 10, or whatever, on their credit cards. How do you recommend that the average person kind of look at, you know, take a step back and look at both sides of a balance sheet instead of just one side?
Great question. I think that's something where a financial professional can be so helpful, because we all have money personalities, we all have tendencies, and I actually think sometimes you have oversavers. And so your example of focusing too much on savings when realizing that, wait a second, right now that's not the best financial strategy is important. What I encourage people to do is really sit down, preferably with a professional, but they can sit down by themselves first and look at what are our goals. What values do we have? How do we want to express our values through how we save, spend, and invest money? And then really looking at where does it make the most sense to do it. So if you have somebody, and I'm a former oversaver, if you have someone that leans towards that tendency, it's just really reminding them that right now it might make more sense to pay down that credit card debt. And showing them the numbers, because sometimes those numbers can be really helpful. And if the numbers don't speak to them, then it's going to the emotional side of, okay, what's it going to feel like if you're paying down debt versus saving? How does that tap into maybe some money message you had growing up that somehow that's not the right way to do it? And then reframing it a bit, because it's really about being financially fit, not necessarily saving or spending. It's just overall being financially fit is the goal.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Chris, you're talking about, you know, making the choice between paying, building up your savings, paying down your debt. You know, for people who are trying to save money, the folks who are putting it in a savings account are usually worried about volatility. They're afraid if they put their money in the stock market, you know, they'll lose out. But what they face with the savings account is lower interest rates. So what other alternatives do they have for saving money?
Well, through payroll deduction at work, there are lots of different options. Many times people can invest in company stock. They can invest in 401k. There are certain savings vehicles that are pre-tax. Some are after-tax. It's possible to set up an automatic draft from your paycheck or your banking account. If you have your paycheck automatically deposited into your checking account, and then that's the next day have a fixed amount go from your checking account to a savings account. That making it automatic, keeping those poor little tired dollar bills out of your wallet, which is a hostile environment for money, those can really help. But the real issue, and that's why I'm again really glad that we have Kathleen here with us, is that it's easy to mistake volatility for loss. Because if the reason you're saving money, if you're recently retired or about to retire, and you're trying to replace an income stream, and you need some kind of investment vehicle or vehicles or portfolio that can create an income stream that you can live on and that can keep your purchasing power intact, then the real price for that is that those instruments can fluctuate in value. But as long as the incomes that they create aren't somehow compromised, then on one side of the coin, you could say, well, it doesn't matter then, because I own shares of XYZ company and the dividend's safe. They've got plenty of coverage. They're going to keep growing it. So confusing the money that you're going to buy put the down payment on the car or spend next year for college or use to add on a kitchen or, something that you're going to be spending soon, confusing that with money that's going to take care of you for a lifetime, that can lead to tension also and can lead to some unfortunate decisions.
So that's why it's important to do a personal assessment and know where you stand.
Yes, yes.
Would that be the first step you take, Kathleen, is to do a personal assessment before you start running off and setting your financial goals?
I actually think it's important to know, and this is certainly where I come in, and Chris comes in with the technical stuff. I think it's really important to know what your tendency is in terms of how you think and feel about money, which is your money mindset, and to really examine, okay, where are the places that you're going to get tripped up, and what are the things that might hook you? One of the things is it's very... it's human nature, actually, to be worried about loss. In fact, our brain experiences losses 2.5 times more painfully than we experience pleasure from a gain. So it's really appreciating that emotional side of money, what your money personality is, doing that personal assessment, and then hiring or working with someone that can bring in that rational expertise to help you look at all your different options and then coach you along the way.
We will continue our conversation about making and keeping your financial goals in 2016. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's January 8th, 2016, and Chris, one of my financial goals this year is to remember to write the correct year on my checks.
As long as you're not writing BC on them. I saw some of those. I'm stern. Still writing BC.
The bank probably wouldn't cash that, would they?
Well, and as WVXU's Howard Wilkinson reminds people on his Facebook page, that pictures and catchers are reporting in 6 weeks. But before we get to that, there's a football game tomorrow, January 9th. And then there's a little basketball here in the tri-state also to get beyond.
Yeah. Quite a bit.
Just a bit.
Joining me today, KBK Wealth Connection founder and author Kathleen Burns Kingsbury, also Chris DeSimio, who's a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Kathleen, talk about the importance of communications when you're setting your financial goals, of talking through these things with your spouse and getting your kids even involved in money talks.
Well, I think one of the hardest things in our society to do is talk openly about money with your partner. And while we share all sorts of intimate information with each other, and we even talk to our kids about all sorts of stuff these days, that unfortunately we still live in a society where there's this money taboo. And so my company and my New Year's resolution for my firm is actually to help advisors as well as clients break that money silence, is what I call it. And the importance of breaking money silence, it's hard to overstate, because if we think about it, not talking about money actually leads 80% of couples to hide financial purchases from each other, okay, so to not be truthful. It leads 70% of families to fail to pass down wealth over several generations, and it leads us to be parents who don't want to do this, but ultimately raise a next generation that's not as financially literate. So really having a financial conversation and understanding, not judging, but understanding where your partner's coming from and trying to understand their perspective and then communicating your perspective is really key. The goal to a happy financial couple isn't agreeing all the time. It's working as a team and understanding where each partner has a strength and maybe a challenge. And then how can we work together in 2016 to be the best financially fit couple or financially fit family that we can be? And so I think it's paramount that we open the lines of communication, and that's why I'm so committed to doing that this year.
Yeah. Kathleen, I'm holding one of your books in my hands here, and on the page before you talk about what a money mindset is, you have a quote from a 47-year-old woman who inherited money from their parents, and quote, in her own words, quote, "I cannibalized my parents' money because I did not feel worthy of it." What kind of discussions can parents have with their adult children to let them know that whatever they do with it is okay, or to kind of at least bring them into the loop? How hard is that? And what are some of the things that grown-ups or that one generation that mom and dad can pass along to their children at any age to keep those assets, those hard-earned assets, on the family balance sheet, as opposed to letting them wander off into probate costs and unnecessary taxes?
Right. In that situation, that woman had a lot of self-esteem issues and had a lot of trouble feeling good about her relationship with money, because what her parents, especially her mother, had expressed to her or role modeled to her was that overspending was the way to go. And so in order to feel connected to her mother, she would overspend. So that's kind of where that comes from. But in terms of having these conversations, I think what's really important is for parents not only to teach their kids the technical aspects. So how could you be financially literate? How do you balance a checkbook? How do you save money? How do you look at what we were talking about at the beginning of the show? How do you look at what's the right decision on both sides of the balance sheet? But to also communicate to them, what are the family values and how do we express those values through how we save, spend, gift, and invest money? For example, in my family, we value adventure. And so we're big skiers and we value adventure, and we put a lot of money towards equipment and to adventure. And that's what's really important to us. Now, if that was not important to the next generation, then we'd talk about, okay, what's important is that, you know, you don't have to honor our love of adventure if that's not resonating with you, but you have to figure out what is something that you value and then use your money wisely. So I think it's having conversations beyond the numbers and really looking at, what does money mean in our life? How can we feel good about both spending it on ourselves as well as gifting it to other, and how does that kind of express who we are? And typically, if you can have an open conversation and allow for people not to always agree, this is next generation, doesn't always have to agree with you either, then what ends up happening is there's a healthier feel around money as opposed to all this secrecy and shame, and that's when it gets complicated, and that often is when the next generation does something very unconscious to just not deal with it. And in that particular quote, she just, you know, was getting rid of it very unconsciously until we did a little piece of work together.
And Kathleen, you talked about how it's difficult to talk about money. There's a taboo around it. I would think one of the problems that would come up is that you might say, hey, let's sit down and have a discussion about these financial issues. And somebody in the family says, oh, financial issues. How boring. So is there a fun way to bring this up?
Yes, there's a couple of, and I'm laughing because I can really identify with that. I mean, my father used to bring up the will at every holiday and would all roll our eyes. do we have to have this boring conversation again? So there's a couple of different ways to do it. I think one is to think about creative ways to talk about money. So it may be that you're watching a movie as a family and you notice that there's certain money messages in the movie. you know, later having a conversation about, hey, did you notice, did you notice that character and how they were acting around money? I mean, you can set that up. You could have them watch Ebenezer Scrooge, and that certainly has lots of money messages. I've designed a deck of cards called the KBK Wealth Connection Cards, and they are a group of questions that help couples and families just talk about their money mindset. So, you know, one of the questions is, if you won $10 million, you know, what would you do with it and why? Or what's the most extravagant purchase you've ever made? And what did that feel like? So it doesn't have to be boring conversations. It can be conversations that really have you kind of laugh and dream and just really think outside the box when it comes to money. And what ends up happening is, if you have a positive association with a money conversation, you're more likely to have another one, as opposed to if you have an association of, oh, this is boring, or this always leads to a fight. And if you are a couple or a family that has trouble getting through a money conversation because it gets too conflictual, that's where you might want to reach out and say, hey, we'll get a little bit of support on how to do this, and we'll really structure it in a way with a mediator there so we can have a useful conversation but also something that's fun. Learning about money mindsets, learning about your money personality. I've got to tell you, I've taught lots of CFP students, the Certified Financial Planning students. I've taught lots of clients as well as advisors how to explore that area of their financial life, and people really enjoy it. And so it opens them up to understand about themselves and how they think and feel about money, and then it becomes less boring or less anxiety-provoking to then look at the dollars and cents.
Yeah, you've mentioned money personalities. What are some of those specific personalities, Kathleen?
Well, there's a variety of different tests out there, and they all break into different personalities. But in general, I mean, the common ones, you think of the person who is a saver versus the person who is a spender. Or there's a money personality that's usually characterized by somebody who has their head in the sand, right? There are personalities where people tend to be under-earners as opposed to being able to use wealth. So they believe that the best way to become wealthy is to work harder. And we all know in this industry that working harder works, but unless you really know how to invest your money and use your money wisely, it's going to be hard to get to that next level of wealth. So there's a variety of different personalities, and the challenge is often what ends up happening is couples' opposites attract. So you end up having a saver with a spender, and that's where that conflict comes in. And if the saver can look at the spender and the spender can look at the saver and say, you know what, there's something I could learn from you that's actually positive around money, then there would be less conflict. It's really appreciating what your partner brings to the table as opposed to criticizing it.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Herb in East Walnut Hills. Hi, Herb.
Hello.
You are on, sir.
Yeah. I offer people an insurance policy which is maintain your good health and maintain your skills. Then if you lose your money, you can always go back to work. And that's the insurance against losing in the long run.
Hmm. So you're looking beyond just, you know, your typical financial goals and saying, think beyond that. Make sure that you invest in yourself, it sounds like, is what you're saying. Is that right, Herb?
Yes. The reason is very obvious. I happen to be a physician. I'm 81 years old, and I'm still working part-time. And over the time when I was in active practice, I would always recommend to people that they be healthy, but combine that with maintaining your skill. And then if you should have financial adversity, you can go back to work. And this is exactly what's happened to me.
Herb, we appreciate the call very much. Thank you. You know, Kathleen, he brings up a good point. You know, invest in yourself, your education, your skills. That's a good goal to set, isn't it?
Well, what good is all this money if you don't use it to do something that's important to you, that as Kathleen has been saying, that expresses your values? What good is it? I mean, other than just hoarding it and looking at it, then you do end up becoming someone who behaves like Ebenezer Scrooge. And sometimes great wealth can make people miserable because they worry about it, and they worry about how to protect it against fears. And you know, the world can be a scary place. And there are some people who are very, very good at scaring people. So, what sounds like what Herb was talking about is something as a way to stay engaged and involved. And not that you should allow your pursuit of good health, both mental and physical, to be an excuse to invest, you know, in a foolhardy way and lose your money.
Exactly.
But you to be able to work and do something that brings meaning to your life and the lives of others because you want to, not because you have to, that's something that's very gratifying. And in the financial services world, we're seeing a lot more of that. People who don't need the money, they could have or should have retired a long time ago, and they're working not because they're trying to make money. They're working because it adds meaning to their lives.
Well, and what you're talking about is that sense of purpose, and I think Herb is living according to his values, because if he was a physician, he values good health. But I also think that it does highlight that trend of how do we continue to be meaningful contributors, not just for financial reasons, but so we feel good about ourselves in this next phase of our life. And what I really picked up on was the fact that he feels in control. So if there was market volatility, he knows, oh, geez, you know, if for some reason something happened, I could go and I could work because I'm healthy and I like what I do. And I think that sense of purpose is often what's missing from people who are just focused on the money or maybe inherited money and didn't really get a chance to develop that sense of who they are and their purpose in the world.
Great point, Kathleen. It's true. There are people who will frequently work harder than they should, or longer than they should, because they're anchored. There's one of your behavioral finance terms. They're anchored to some idea or some number that they feel like they have to have because maybe they thought that that's what they inherited, and that money can never go below a certain number, or that's what they want to leave to their kids, and it can never go below a certain number, when frequently the kids don't care about it. The kids don't care about the money. More frequently, adult children are saying, look, Mom, Dad, I'm okay. You go have fun, be comfortable. And by the way, all that furniture you've been collecting, it doesn't match any of my stuff. So, you know, the salt and pepper shaker collection that fills up two rooms, it's, you know, honest. Mom, Dad, it's okay.
That's Kathleen's point. Have that open, honest communication.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, all those collector plates, we really don't want them. These are discussions, by the way, that come from, these are real-life discussions that take place.
513-419-7100, and we're going to talk with Mark in Eastside. Hi, Mark.
Oh, am I on?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, you know, I have a financial planner question. What's the difference between a financial planner who is a fiduciary and a financial planner who's not a fiduciary?
Well, Kathleen, you want to tackle that?
I can, and then Chris can certainly chime in. But a fiduciary has a legal obligation to put the client's best interest first. And if they don't do that, then there's a legal, not to mention an ethical issue. Someone who doesn't have a legal fiduciary-ish responsibility doesn't mean that they're not putting the client first, but they have a lower standard. They need to offer clients a variety of different options that are suitable for the client, and then the client makes that selection. So there's a lot of talk about it in the industry right now, and I think what's important is finding an advisor who's ethical, who's honest. If the fiduciary responsibility is important to you, then look for that. But I know lots of people who are paid in a variety of ways who do put their clients first. So it's really looking for that ethical person. But it's a legal term that's been tossed around a lot these days.
Yeah, I agree with Kathleen's assessment. There are people who work under sometimes both platforms. They're good. They're just the important thing as an investor is to find someone you're comfortable with and make sure that you understand how they're getting paid and make sure that you're comfortable.
So, Chris and Kathleen, as you know, as you're getting ready to start setting your financial goals for 2016, give us some ideas as to what are the very first step or first steps that you should take in getting into this whole process.
You know, I can tell you what my top three things are to be thinking about, and maybe Chris can chime in with something that's a little bit more concrete than maybe what I'm going to add, because I always think about goal setting, whether it's financial goal setting or any types of goal setting, to really start, I've already said this, but to start with what's important to you. So I'll give you an example from my own life. There are three buckets this year that I'm going to focus on in my life. So instead of being crazy and just trying to make a ton of money or whatever the case may be, I'm going to say it either is going to bring me satisfaction and in my business, KBK Wealth Connection. It's going to be something that I enjoy with my husband, or it's going to allow me to write my next book. So those are the three buckets. So anything outside of that that's dangled in front of me, financially or otherwise, and this is more from an income standpoint, I'm going to say no to. And then, so that's my values. The next thing I would say is whatever you set up as a goal, cut it in half. It's better to achieve something than to feel bad about not achieving it. Tell somebody, whether it's a financial advisor, a coach, a friend, your partner, it's important to communicate what your goals are because research shows from a behavioral standpoint, you're more likely to actually reach them if you're accountable to somebody. And last but not least, if for some reason it doesn't happen, say all of a sudden I notice that I took a speaking engagement that doesn't fit in any of those three categories. And so I'm flying there and I'm beating myself up. There's no point in that. So the point is, if you fall off the wagon or if you do something that doesn't fit with what your New Year's resolution is, don't beat yourself up. Instead, learn from that mistake and say, okay, where's the learning here? So next time I can either set a resolution that is going to be more effective, or next time I'm going to be able to abide by my resolution. Because nothing around finance and human behavior is perfect. So those are my three tips for setting and engaging in financial resolutions that are going to stick and actually make a difference in your life.
The only thing I would add to that, because those are great, Kathleen, but the only thing from a technical, not so much technical, but from a nuts and bolts standpoint, is to at least be a little more specific and honest with ourselves, each of us setting financial goals, that to say, well, I want to have more money next year, or I want to have a goal that doesn't have a number or a time on it that you're going to achieve it by. It's just kind of a vague wish out there in terms of setting your numeric financial plan. So addressing not just both sides of the balance sheet in terms of debt and equity, but both sides of your emotional balance sheet, the why you do what you do versus how you're doing it, they're just as important. And so I would recommend as a good place for people to start to, the B word, set a budget, see what it really costs for you to live, it's neither good nor bad, but just get your arms around what your monthly nut is so that you can figure out how to keep it going after you retire.
And Kathleen, how important is it to learn from the mistakes you've made in the past? I mean, I guess you shouldn't run away from
it. I think it's huge. I mean, I think that makes the difference between somebody who's kind of evolving and continuing to work towards something versus somebody who tends to stay stuck in their behavior. It also can emotionally make you feel better. You know, beating ourselves up or feeling bad about ourselves, you know, that's not a good time. But if you can stop and take a step back and look at, oh, what do I need to do that's a little bit different, then you're continuing to work towards your ultimate goal, which is, you know, whatever those numbers were and those values and that kind of thing in your statement. I do want to jump in and say one thing, and this is my perspective, but when I hear the word budget, I think, that boring.
That's boring.
So
yeah.
I'm going to reframe that.
How do you make it fun?
It doesn't, you know, some things in life are just things you have to do as an adult, right? But I use the word spending plan. Because if you use the word spending plan, it's I'm standing up taller. I feel empowered. If I use budget, I think, what do I have to cut out?
I like that. Spending is more fun.
It's reframing. Yeah, maybe. So it's reframing that. So I love what you had to say, Chris, and I do think the actual numbers and time frames are key, and that's certainly in my goal setting with myself or any client. But really think about the words and how they impact you. For somebody else, budget might be an empowering word. But I know for me, if I say it's a spending plan, then I just feel better about it, and I'm more willing to do it than think about, what do I have to cut out this year?
Reminds me, I couldn't stand the idea of eating squid, but I love calamari.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yes, perfect. Kathleen and Chris, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Mark.
KBK Wealth Connection founder and author Kathleen Burns Kingsbury and Chris DeSimeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. As a reminder, the information provided on today's show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. Up next, Metro has some big plans for the new year. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.